I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories.
Hi, my name is Anna, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a former midwife turned midwitch, and I now work with women worldwide, assisting them in having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. I offer one-on-one sessions and packages and online courses for conscious mamas who don't want to leave their birth up to chance. I also mentor current and aspiring birth workers in my Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship Program. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment right now and leave a review. They mean the world to me and is also your way of helping me reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. Together, we are changing the birth narrative, one birth story at a time. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Ryan. Ryan is a mama of one and one on the way, as well as two rescue mutts from LA, USA. She's also the co-founder and co-CEO of Needed, a company championing better nutrition for women, their families, and our earth. She's a lifelong environmentalist and holistic nutritionist with training in folk herbalism. In today's episode, we will hear about her home birth with a midwife that she sourced way before she was even pregnant. Ryan started her conscious conception journey years before she conceived by optimizing her own gut biome and nutritional levels. And when she finally tried for a baby, she conceived on the first try. We talk about low amniotic fluids in this episode and the non-existent evidence of it being a problem on its own, as well as the use of castor oil as a natural induction method with a Russian twist. Curious about Ryan? Find her on Instagram as RyRyWoodbury. Now, before we dive on into the episode with Ryan, I want to invite you into my online community, The Village, my exclusive, private, amazing sisterhood of crunchy, natural, and alternative women and birth nerds. If you love this podcast, you will love this community. And I have even better news, because this month you can join for free. Try it out for a whole 30 days for free. Cancel at any time, no strings attached. It is the best place to hang out if you're a crunchy mama, a birth nerd, or a birth worker. So come on over and try it already today. The 30-day free offer ends in the end of January. Hi, Ryan, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you today?
And I'm so glad to be here. I'm doing well.
Brilliant. I'm really excited to have you on, both because I'm curious about your home birth story, but I also, you know, you're a nutritionist and you're one of the co-founders of Needed. And I'm really curious a little bit about your journey and also about the state of
you know, kind of nutrition and nourishment in women of today. So I'm really curious to interview you both about your birth story, but a little bit about that as well. So would you want to start by telling us, how did you decide to have a home birth?
Yeah, I will start there. And truthfully, maybe there was a seed planted when I was really little. I grew up in Los Angeles, suburbs of Los Angeles, but in a, I don't know, pretty conservative family, I would say, in a lot of ways. But I had a preschool assistant teacher when I was in preschool that had a home birth. And I have a strong childhood memory of hearing about it and just feeling like that made so much sense to me. That trust in, you know, the body knowing what it needed. You didn't need medical interventions. And somehow an early seed was planted. I would say, you know, maybe I moved away from that seed for a period of time. But when I started thinking seriously about becoming a mother and planning to become a mother, there was no doubt in my mind that I wanted anything other than a home birth. And a little bit of the work was then convincing my husband, my partner, that that was going to be the plan. So we actually interviewed a number of midwives before we even started trying, because it was one of those, like, I need him on board. We need our person, our care provider confirmed before the baby even comes into that world, is sort of, this path is so sure that we need to get it sorted. We'd interviewed maybe four or so midwives even before trying to conceive.
That's amazing. I've had a few women like you on, like just so damn organized that like you already know the kind of birth you want, and you go on out and you find a midwife before you become pregnant. I mean, I love that. I think that is amazing. Yeah.
It's funny. I'm organized maybe in certain ways, and then I live in chaos in other ways. So, but there's certain things I can be very clear on and just go for it for sure.
Yeah, that's so brilliant. I love that. And then how did you go about conceiving? I'm guessing it's, you know, it's very conscious then. Did you have kind of, what kind of conscious conception did you have? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think to give a little background to the group, I'm the co-founder of Needed, as Anna mentioned. We're a perinatal nutrition business, really looking to set a radically better standard for nutrition in this life stage. We think women are undersupported, and this undersupported nourishment is leading to pretty suboptimal outcomes for both mom and baby and future generations. So came into this sphere actually before I was a mom. I was an environmental science major in school, and then ended up doing some extensive nutritional training, and really came at nutrition from an interest in the environment and that human sort of earth connection. And because we haven't been nourishing the earth the way it really needs to be supported, our food system is depleted, our toxin exposure is at crazy levels, and it really impacts sort of human health. So I got really interested in that connection and really viewing human health as an entry point whereby people can start to care more about environmental issues, and in some ways got drawn into the perinatal life stage because I think it's where that connection can be most obvious and poignant. Mm-hmm. And people are also willing to listen, so you can tell a bigger story. Mm-hmm. So anyways, a little bit of just like background there, but started the journey in building Needed and setting this new standard well before I was a mom, but increasing my learning around really what does radically better, what does optimal perinatal health look like. And I was lucky to be, you know, working on formulating our products, working with a team of experts and planning for my own birth. So my preconception journey was long. One piece of it was finding the right care provider in the midwife, but also I got salmonella in college, and I think I had some residual gut issues from that I'd sort of, I was a general healthy person that was able to manage, but never fully took the time to get completely under control. And I think as part of designing our pre and probiotic, just learned how important that maternal microbiome is, and and seeding your kids. Mm-hmm. So a big part of my preconception journey actually was rebuilding my gut. I did a kind of a protocol where I completely wiped out my existing microbiome and then slowly rebuilt it. So anyways, it was a little bit of an extended and crazy kind of preconception journey. But I think for me, I got some of the big, you know, blockages out of the way. I think getting pregnant, my like core belief is it's very energetic. And for me, I think the two biggest things were, one, I think that my husband and I being aligned on sort of the birth plans and plans thereafter. And then my feeling like my body was in that physically sort of optimal place to conceive. So I would say, you know, in some ways we were trying to conceive for maybe 3 years as I was actively preparing my body. But we were lucky that when it actually came to officially trying, we got pregnant on the first go.
Amazing. You know, but I love what you're sharing. I think it's so important because, you know, and I say this too, you know, our soils are depleted. Our world today is so toxic, crazy toxic, right? One of the biggest things when I work with women and families who want to conceive and we look at their, you know, fertility and optimizing it and, you know, going through this conscious conception journey, we talk about, you know, nutrition, but also detoxing like your house, your life, like what are you using on all levels, right? This is so important. And to, and even, you know, I think that I'm fairly, you know, healthy woman and what I eat, and I'm very, you know, conscious about that. But I also know that just because of where, you know, how I like the world we live in, it's going to be hard to optimize my nutrition just from food.
That was a lot of the original insights exactly for Nita. I think myself and my co-founder, Julie, were surprised at both being trained nutritionists, spending a lot of care and attention into what we ate. You know, I spent a lot of time, you know, ordering meats direct from certain farms and shopping at the farmer's market and preparing things in the way that you can optimize bioavailability. And then when we started doing some more extensive nutritional testing, realized that we had very significant deficiencies across a range of nutrients that would have, you know, set us up for being extraordinarily depleted throughout a pregnancy process. And we're just sort of like, okay, if our panels look like this, what does it mean for, so, you know, others that aren't putting as much kind of care and attention? And that was really what spurred needed that a standard prenatal isn't getting anywhere close to supporting women the way that it should.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most obvious things is when you look at the generic ones having folate in, or folic acid instead of folate, like that's the biggest key. Like if anyone's listening and you're looking at your prenatal, if it's folic acid instead of folate, it's not the optimal product for you. And I mean, there's so much more we could talk about in that, right? But that's so obvious and it's so easy to see on all the generic ones. So I'm really interested in this too. And I'm like super grateful and excited that you are my sponsor for this podcast. I love your products. I use them myself. And I, you know, for me, I haven't found another one that I actually could stand by. Truly, truly, like that is honestly what it's true. There's so few out there that hold the standard that you do. And most of them are just expensive pee. They truly are, you know.
I appreciate you, yeah, saying that. And yeah, I think we do feel that we're doing something pretty dramatically different from what the standard has been. And are learning how to better communicate that to those that aren't as extensively trained in what to look for. As you know, it's complicated to know folic acid versus methylfolate that's getting into, you know, biochemistry. And it's unfortunate that this, you know, advice and information isn't readily accessible. And it's such a burden on women to do research, basically.
And the thing is, doctors and midwives say to women, especially if they know they're trying to conceive, they go like, oh, are you taking your folic acid? That is what they're saying. So that's what you're looking for on your prenatal. And it's like, no, it's wrong, you know? So anyways, I could go on a tangent about this. We're not going to do that. It's not about this. We're going to go into your birth story. But I just, I'm so excited to hear from you about all of this. So you obviously then became pregnant really easily when you finally tried and you knew already you're going to have a home birth. Is there something special from your pregnancy that you want to share about leading up to your birth?
I was lucky in that I had a very easy pregnancy. You know, I think some is luck and some is attributed to my body was just in a really healthy place and I was nutritionally as supported as you could be. And I think there was certainly like a calmness with pregnancy of so excited, feeling connected to my little girl. I think because of seeing home birth early on and listening to a lot of birth stories throughout my life thereafter, I had a lot of calmness coming into birth and labor. There wasn't fear around it. And certainly, I think a lot of moments where it was like easy to get fearful and moments where things kind of worked out in a kismet way. I had a backup OB that got super worried about my fluid levels. I think I probably was a little bit dehydrated. I would say I'm a heavy coffee drinker and that was my vice. I didn't give up in pregnancy. I decided I was doing everything else right, that I was still going to have my 2 cups of coffee a day. But a hydration support I had worked on formulating basically like launched the same day I got the advice of like, hey, you need to focus on your fluid levels and hydration. So there were some sort of beautiful things that came out of that. And that was able to help rise my fluid levels. I had probably everyone has the different parts of the journey that are harder. I had a lot more worries about, you know, the postpartum side of things. There was things around, of course, meeting the daughter was, you know, just like so magical and you want to spend time with her. But I think figuring out in the, you know, running a business that's pretty demanding, how do you balance the kind of home care life, showing up at work and showing up at home in the way that you wanted to? And I had a lot more, I'd say like a much more difficult postpartum transition, and that stress ended up manifesting in having pretty significant eyesight and what I felt to be like cognitive issues in the few months basically after the kind of postpartum bubble was broken.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is something that's not talked about. Your brain changes in pregnancy and for up to 2 years postpartum, and it's physiological. It happens. You lose, I don't want to say lose, but there's a lot of more gray matter all of a sudden that is then, you know, people go, oh, you have mama brain or baby brain and all of this. But it's actually really magical. You have this opportunity to rewire your brain and it will do so. And you can be conscious about it or you can be unconscious about it. And obviously most today are unconscious about it because no one talks about it first and foremost. And a lot of women might need or be forced to go back to work way too early than they want to, instead of, you know, this is the time truly, really, that nature has designed for you to imprint on your baby, to learn your baby's, you know, deepest needs and cues and everything, to just sync with your baby and be highly in tune with them. And that's obviously interrupted for the mamas who choose or need to go back to work.
Poignantly. Because I went back to work when Emerson was 8.5 weeks old. And I still got time with her. She never took a bottle. So I demand breastfed her until, well, she was like 21 weeks old. My milk just stopped. I think in pregnancy, my body was like, oh, hell no, we're not doing the second trimester both at the same time. But which was beautiful to still get the time and the ability to work and demand breastfeed with at-home childcare. But I think that I was, you know, I think you knew some of it intellectually that, hey, like prolactin and dopamine are antagonists. So inherently, when you are breastfeeding, your brain can't function with the, you know, quick thinking kind of responses it normally do. But yeah, it took me back in a big, big way. But we're launching a product here shortly, a breastfeeding safe cognitive support product that came out of me trying to figure out that transition of how can I feel a little bit more like myself and still have this amazing connection with a newborn baby and celebrating the, you know, this moment in time. And you know, some form of an old identity that you wanted to keep going to.
Yeah. And I guess that's the big thing the first time around you become a mother, the maiden to mother rite of passage, that you have to let go of the maiden, and that maiden who could work maybe 10 hours a day or whatever and had all this energy and focus on manifesting her dream in work life, but then to navigate actually embodying the mother and being that flexible mother who now has a child that wants to have you up all day, all night, and demands your presence.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Needed, a beautiful woman-owned leading women's health supplement brand founded by two mamas who were shocked when they realized that 95% of women who actually take a prenatal vitamin have nutrient deficiencies. And it's shocking that this is the state of most of us in our current modern world. But our soils are depleted, and so our foods are not as nutrient dense, and who really eats all their greens every day? I've been extremely hesitant to recommend supplements because most of them are just expensive pee. The cheap one you buy at your chemist is most likely not bioavailable, meaning your body just can't absorb most of it, if any. I truly haven't found any other supplement brand that I would ever recommend to any of my clients, friends, or use myself than Needed. I myself use their multivitamins, both in capsule form and in powder form, depending on what I feel like that day. I also use their pre and probiotics and collagen powder. I know it's clean, high quality, and beyond organic, and I can feel how my body absorbs it. With Needed, you get real nourishment for every phase of your life. Whether you're thinking, trying, are pregnant, or in your postpartum, or deeper into your mama years. With the code The Natural Birth Podcast, you can save 20% off your first order. Go to thisisneeded.com via the link in the show notes to get the automatic discount on their website.
Let's dive on into your birth story then. We know you have your midwife lined up and you're about to going to labor. What happens? Do you have any like early signs of labor approaching for you? And what week were you when you went into labor?
Yeah. So I worked up to my due date. So I worked right up to 40 weeks. And I would say in that week following, I was not in a hurry for Emerson to come. She was born in February, but it was an oddly warm week in LA. So it was like 75, 78 degrees and sunny. We live a couple blocks from the beach. And I went swimming in the ocean every day and took our dogs on hikes. And it was the first time in a long time where I was just doing nothing other than sort of soaking up nature and enjoying just being. And so actually the week, which ended up being a little bit over a week before she was born, ended up being one of my like favorite weeks of all time. I think it's, you know, different than a lot of friends where those weeks end up really tough waiting for the baby. I think that somehow she knew, the world knew that like I needed that week with nothing on the agenda to just kind of be and relax and be able to be ready for her. So I'd say about a week went by, and then on day probably, I guess she was born on 41 days, 41 in a day, probably at 40 and 6 days, I lost my mucus plug overnight. So it was this transition of like, oh, is labor starting? Is she coming? Is it finally time? I think I'm now ready for her. I had these 6 days of, you know, relaxation. And I think that was the first morning that I woke up like sad she wasn't here yet. And I think it was really like, okay, I had my week. I'm ready for her. And it's showing my body's sort of signs of being ready, went in, I guess, that day to meet with both my midwife and backup OB at the 41-week mark to have a check-in. And basically, she passed with the backup OB the stress test, but he sort of felt like my fluid levels were still too low and got super concerned. My midwife ultimately wasn't that concerned, but yeah. I think it got my husband worried because the OB said, you know, if you were my patient, I'd be meeting you in the hospital right now.
I just want everyone to hear this because there is no evidence. I just want everyone to hear. There's no evidence around low fluid levels and any danger to your baby. And I want to say that the fluid levels changes throughout the day. So it could be one number when you're there and then in 2 hours when you've had a liter of water, then all of a sudden that changes because you know what the fluid is? It's baby pee. So it's just, this drives me up the wall. There's absolutely no evidence. And people are getting induced for this left, right, and center. I've worked with clients who have been
scared. And the ultrasounds aren't necessarily that accurate at measuring the fluid levels too. So,
oh, goodness me. So anyone who ever gets that, like, if you need advice, come to me or just seek out someone who can tell you the truth, please.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, I think that, you know, I think my husband doesn't have as much information. That certainly made him nervous. We were able to, the good news is that one of the beautiful things that I really appreciate about my pregnancy is that my midwife and my backup OB have a very beautiful relationship. There actually is a lot of mutual respect, and he will, you know, I guess I would say my midwife was a little bit concerned about my fluid levels, as I'd mentioned earlier in the pregnancy. And she was the one that was like, hey, why don't you just go see Dr. Chin to double check this? And who knows, the ultrasound said they were low, and that's when our hydration support came out. And truthfully, at that point, they probably were low because, again, I was drinking probably too much coffee and not hydrating enough. Anyway, at this point in time, we all got on the phone, had a conversation. You know, I think there's a lot of advice with, you know, asking a doctor around, like, you know, hey, can I take 48 hours? Can I take 24 hours? And then you can see, is this something that's like a preference, or they really think it's like a, you know, no, you, I want to do something right now. And so we were just, Dr. Chin ended up being like, oh yeah, no problem, take 24 hours. And that got my husband kind of calmed down and settled, but we decided we would try and speed things along. So after that, ended up going into, you know, acupuncture, which I'd been doing regularly, and then taking castor oil. And castor oil ended up working, you know, well for me. I think it doesn't work for everyone. I sort of think your body has to be already in a place where it's just about ready to go. And because I'd lost my mucus plug the night before, I felt that there were signs of some slight dilation of her just feeling like the timing was okay. So I did take castor oil. That got me into labor. And I think I ended up having probably an interesting labor because of it. My contractions started around probably 9 or 10 p.m. that night, but I started having contractions that were 2 minutes apart.
Yeah.
All night.
That's the thing with the castor oil. It can really, so you're right about castor oil will not work if you're actually not ready to birth a baby. And it's really important for people to hear that so they don't just take castor oil at like 38 weeks, you know, 39 weeks, going like, okay, I'm ready now. I just want to have this baby.
Yeah, you're just going to have some unpleasant time at the toilet for a few days.
Exactly. And also, I don't know if you took castor oil with some other things that kind of mitigate the harshness of the castor oil. Did you just do pure castor oil?
I took it straight. The way my midwife recommends it is sort of the Russian method, she calls it. She's
the
like,
Russian method.
A tablespoon every hour. And then on the like third hour,
That's hardcore.
If things haven't started, finish the bottle with a shot of vodka.
Oh my God, I would not recommend that to anybody. I'm scared.
I didn't have to get to the shot of vodka because things started going, but yeah, that's her.
Oh my God. For anyone listening, you can Google something called the midwife's brew. It's a nicer version, much less castor oil. And there's together with like almond flour and other things that mitigate some of that laxative effect. Oh my God. Then I can definitely understand that you had like really powerful contractions like from the get-go. So for anyone listening too, it is a gamble. I mean, you could call it Russian roulette as well, can't you? If you're on the, if we continue with the Russian theme here, that, you know, yes, it can kick you into labor. It can be a really intense labor because of it. And obviously we're going to hear your story soon. And it can also mean that you have false labor for like 24 hours and you actually don't go into proper labor. It just gives you that kind of diarrhea, contractions, and it actually doesn't do what you want it to do. So it is a Russian roulette. And also, you should definitely not do it before like 41 weeks, preferably closer to 42. You know, if you're facing really, you know, needing to transfer from your care at home or like something like that, right? You shouldn't just use it willy-nilly, knowing that it does have side effects that you might not want.
Yeah. And I don't know, who knows, for the side effects. I mean, both are certainly the unpleasantness and the how rapidly, you know, the going to the bathroom, how rapidly labor comes on. And then I also have some question marks around what does it do to the microbiome. This is unfounded, but for some friends and other practitioners that have taken castor oil recently in their births, we've all just had, I'd say, like slower adjustments in being able to regulate our guts postpartum. So there's no science around this yet. It's just, hey, a correlation between some of us and, you know, some mechanisms that make sense around why, you know, excess postpartum gas or whatever could end up being there. But
I think that's really interesting you're saying that, and like a fair point, right? It's important to know that it's still like an induction, like it's a natural induction, if you want to call it that. But, you know, it's still trying to get something to happen that wouldn't necessarily would have happened by itself. Or it might have. You don't know. You might have gone into labor that night anyway.
You might have, yeah. Or it could have happened on a slightly different timeline. You know, I think kids still, for the most part, unless you completely intervene, come on the timeline they want to come. But yeah, who knows? Who knows? At least, I think in the moment, especially when sort of the agreement was my husband was like, if I'm not in labor by noon the next morning, I was meeting Dr. Chin at the hospital, that having something that like I could do felt empowering in the moment.
Yeah.
Versus just like waiting around and seeing if, you know, luck was in your favor to avoid going to the hospital.
Yeah.
So I had contractions 2 minutes apart all night. And I think from 10 p.m. till 6 a.m. the next morning, we called my midwife at 6 when we woke up, told her what, you know, had happened. And she was like, okay, I'm going to come over right away and check you. So she was there at our house by 6:30 a.m. And it wasn't really false labor. I guess I was almost, you know, 5 centimeters dilated. Things had progressed. That all felt positive. And then it was interesting. My contractions just stopped for, you know, like 2 hours almost. And she was just like, I think it's a sign your body needs to rest. So went to sleep for a couple of hours that morning, woke up, went for a walk around our neighborhood, and then contractions restarted. But then they restarted in a kind of an opposite pattern, that they were then further apart. And even up until my daughter was born, so she was born at 4 p.m. that day. So in total, I was in labor for 18 hours. So very close together overnight, long pause, and then they restarted. And even up until the end, they didn't come closer than 3 to 4 minutes apart. So even when I was pushing, there was a big gap. So I was, you know, originally in the water and then was pulled out of the water because my midwife was worried about the contractions being that far apart. And, you know, I think there's Apgar scores are a little bit lower when babies are born in the water, and the ability to have her, you know, out of the water.
But yeah, I mean, that's very interesting. And I love that you're sharing that. So that to me shows very clearly that that was castor oil during the 2 minutes apart for sure, which makes sense. It can become quite intense and harsh with castor oil. And then it sounds like that kind of went out, you know, went through your body and wasn't affecting you anymore. And you had that moment of rest, which is great. And then when it started up again, it sounds like your actual normal rhythm could be that you have more space between your contractions. And you know what? That's absolutely perfect and normal for some women to do. And, you know, we'll dive back on in. So you were on a walk and we'll walk you through the whole like labor before you birth as well, so everyone can hear your whole story. But I really want to emphasize that some women will have only maybe 2 contractions in 10 minutes for their whole labor. And that's fine. And when you're pushing, you might also have big gaps. That's also okay. That's not something pathological or wrong with that. They could, together with other signs, things can be like not normal, but just that in itself is not a sign. Other things.
Yeah. And it didn't feel unnormal in some ways. It like the labor felt weirdly, maybe not weirdly, as you know, you're familiar with a lot of labors being, I don't know, not jarring. It was very smooth, very peaceful. Mm. You had a lot of time to rest in between the contractions. And, you know, I think my midwife was checking in on my daughter throughout the process and I think was positively, but very happy in that Emerson was never seen to be at any moment in the journey under stress. Yeah.
Beautiful. And so take us back to walking around the block where you were going and having, you know, the contractions start again. What time are we talking about? And take us through the journey of laboring and how you were coping with your labor.
Yeah. So let's see. It was probably around, so I went to bed, baby came here. So I probably went to sleep around 7, slept around 2 hours. We had a little food. I probably ended up, I don't know, going out for a walk around 9:30, 9:45. It's a beautiful day and actually was a full moon. The full moon was up in the sky. It's crisp, but sunny. It was just gorgeous. But it was sort of funny as I was, you know, in labor and a lot of our neighbors were leaving for work for the day and kind of out and about. We ended up like having little chats as we trotted around the neighborhood with my husband, myself, and then my doula. We went gone for like about a 40-minute walk and I probably had 2 contractions while we were out there where I'd hang on my husband and then my doula would put pressure on my back and, you know, definitely had a few sort of like funny eyes from neighbors, but I, you know, I didn't care. It was a very beautiful, kind of peaceful, special morning. We love where we live. We live in this like kind of canyon tucked between the mountains and the sea. So it's very restorative. And yeah, I have just a lot of, I think, blissful memories from that walk.
Beautiful. And then you're walking back to your home and
it started to feel like they were like accelerating. And it sort of felt like we were walking home and it was like, okay, it's time. Like, you know, Emerson's going to come today. And let's walk home and let's bring her into this world.
Calling all the women back to the village. Have you felt the aching longing in your blood and bones, sister? The longing to belong to a village of women walking alongside you through life and rites of passages. A sisterhood who nurtures and supports you as you navigate living in harmony with your own and Mother Nature's heartbeat and cycles? Do you know in your deepest heart and soul that we were never supposed to live this independently and isolated to each other as we are in our modern, unnatural world? Then the Maiden Mother and Maga Village is what you have been longing for. In our village, you will find the women who know that they carry magic within their wombs, that know they are powerful, sovereign, and holy by nature. The natural, conscious, open-hearted, and empathic ones from all over the world. Until we live back in the physical village, let us be your village. It's not the same, not nearly as nurturing as a physical village, but it is nourishing. It is supportive and it's available 24/7. It is emotional, spiritual, and mental support, and it's all online, accessible to all. We gather the first Wednesday of every month in a deeply nourishing sharing circle that finishes in a Mama's Q&A full of support and wisdom. And you can now join us for free for a whole month to see if this sisterhood village is for you. You don't have to do motherhood by yourself, dear heart. There is a community of like-minded women ready to receive you in a big warm hug if you let us. Find out more at thenaturalbirthcourse.com.
And moving into your home and into your deeper labor stages, I'm guessing, you know, when you were out walking, you were in early stages. And when did you move through into maybe more active stage of feeling more drawn inward? Or did you have that experience of feeling more, you know, that it got more intense, stronger?
Yeah. I mean, we definitely had a shift. I was in active labor for about, I think things once we got home, already felt like more of that drawn inward of just sort of like, hey, we had that nice walk. We saw the sunshine and it was nice in our bedroom once we came inside where I ended up staying thereafter. We have like a window up on the ceiling where you actually could still see the moon. So there was this like moonlight that was peering into the room. And even though it was sunny, sort of we're on the backside of the canyon. So it was kind of, you know, darkish in that room, but guided by some sun and the moonlight coming in through this one window. I think it started to feel at that point that I was going more inward and just kind of focused on connecting with her and every contraction feeling like you were bringing her closer. We had still a little bit of time, probably actually at least a couple of hours before I really kicked into that transition into active labor.
Beautiful.
And I remember that part of it, I feel like I don't remember as much other than I remember my like midwife's assistant walking in right around that transition and just like, I'd never met her before, and she was just this light and this immediate energy that I connected with of like, I don't know, having Amy here now is so special, and she's actually going to be my doula. Left LA, and Amy's going to be my doula for this next birth. But it's funny how in a moment where things were otherwise kind of like blurring together and sort of you were in your own place, I remember her walking in is one of the, I don't know, strongest memories during my labor, but strongly positive of just like, oh, this is such nice energy to suddenly be in our home.
Beautiful. And I love that that was your reaction.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's just some people that have that energy. I remember like a couple of days later, I'm jumping around a little bit, but we have two big dogs. They're both rescue mutts. And I had big plans for them being there for the birth. And I think that was the sort of the one disappointing part in the lead up, that my husband and my midwife were very much like, no, the dogs can't be here. They're going to be too much of a distraction. And I think it ultimately was the the right decision because they're kind of crazy, but there was some sadness in having to let go of like being able to like see them throughout the birthing process. But our big guy, who's like, you know, over 100 pounds, looks like a Rottweiler, is very skeptical of new people coming into his home. But Amy just has this energy of like, she forgot the protocol one day of like, if she's meeting Lincoln for the first time, Dave should take him outside for her to say hi. And she just walked into our house and he just like, he didn't care. Because like somehow he just knew that, you know, her energy was good and it she was meant to be there. And there's not many people who that would be the case with.
How beautiful, and how beautiful that you're going to have the same team for your birth this time. So she enters your space, which probably also means that your midwife called her in because she knew you were closer to birthing. That's usually when the second midwife comes. So at this point, have you gotten into the water? How are you managing with the sensations of labor and contractions? Do you use breath? Do you, you know, what helps you in those moments when there are really big waves coming through?
Yeah. I think two things. So I had been in the water in earlier labor. The shower felt really good, putting warm water on my back. So I was in the shower for a while. I did get in the tub for a certain period of time. At this point, when she came, I think I'd been in the tub and then was fully out of the tub. I was on the toilet, actually, when she walked in. That ended up like feeling comfortable to push. And then I think truthfully for comfort during those, the contractions, it was breathing. And then I think there was like a mantra I'd listened to in preparation for birth that was every, you know, every wave is bringing you closer to your baby. Mm-hmm. And I think that just that phrasing that like I'm getting closer and closer to meeting her really helped me and kept me calm.
Beautiful. So you were in the pool for a while and then your midwife thought that your contractions were too spaced out. So she wanted you on land. Was that right?
That's exactly right. So when Amy came, I believe I'd already been pulled out of the pool. And it didn't, I would say, that was her suggestion. It wasn't like a forced, but in some ways I was like ready, I think, to be out of the water. So it also did feel, it felt good to come out. And so I spent a little bit of time in the bathroom and then otherwise I think was just moving around our bedroom in different positions and ultimately landed up on in bed for when Emerson was born.
Okay. How did you birth her? What position did you end up?
I was on all fours on bed.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And do you remember the sensation of your baby being birthed?
I do. Yeah. I remember. There's funny. I remember this, like, the sort of feeling of like, oh, her head's out. Do you want to like feel it? And then, but also just being so lost in that final sensation of like almost not being sure I wanted to go down and touch her head, which was kind of a bizarre feeling versus just like, let me focus on the, like the last push to get out. Her sac didn't break until like the contraction before she was born.
Beautiful.
So yeah, in some ways, it's sort of like it would have been neat to see her fully born in sac, but it was meant to break sooner.
Yeah, it's very rare for the sac to fully hold all the way through. Usually after the head is born, like the head might be in the sac and you can see all the waters and everything. And then when the shoulders come through, that's usually when it breaks. Like, yeah. Super duper rare for it to be like the baby's fully in call and like it's not broken at all. Super duper extremely rare. More, I would say maybe more so that happens in home births, but specifically maybe in water births, but it's like still usually in the water they break too. It's very, very rare that you actually have a baby that's in fully in call. How gorgeous. And so you're on all fours and your baby, she being passed through your legs. What happens when your baby's born?
She's born. My husband catches her, and then they immediately bring her to me, to my chest. And yeah, I just remember her like crying out a little bit, which was reassuring. And then I don't know, just looking at her and just, I don't know, waves of just like love and power in some ways that sort of you maybe feel your most magnificent, most powerful in those moments of like, wow, like we just brought this little human into the world.
Yeah, it's pretty epic. And did you end up birthing your placenta on the bed as well?
I stood up, maybe like stayed with Emerson for, I don't know, 10 minutes or so. And then I stood up to birth the placenta. It felt good, I think, to stand up. And then my husband got some time to hold her. I took a couple minutes to do that.
Beautiful. Yeah. And if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now who's about to have her first baby and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
I think the biggest thing is just going inward in advance of the birth and figuring out what are any fears you do have and be able to confront them such that you can be in as peaceful of a place as possible once the journey actually begins.
Mm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's so important, isn't it? Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your birth story. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on.
Thank you, Anna. I really appreciate the space that you hold and all the conversations that you share. And it's really an honor to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it, leave a review, or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.